Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
What's going on, everybody? On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd for show 76.
Man, that seemed to be a fitting intro, Sean Wally. Problems. Man, there's a... Boy, I can tell you there's a few problems going on in my neck of the woods in Northern California. And, boy, the Raiders... I can't even begin to... explain how gut-wrenching it is, but of course, man, if there isn't 99 problems, there's, 100, of course, but man, the Cleveland Browns went into Cleveland yesterday and supposed to be the first win of the season for the Raider Nation and came out 23-13 in a loss once again.
And Sean, that drops the Oakland Raiders and their Raider Nation faithful to a record of 0-7. Do you know or can you remember the last time the Raiders had a victory on the football field?
Jeez, well, I know that it's 13 in a row, so I'd have to go back into the archives of last year. And, it's tough to stomach because yesterday's game was – a game dominated by the Oakland Raiders, to be honest with you. I mean, you're talking about first downs, 19-15, and, of course, total yards. The Raiders, beat the Browns 387-306. And if you look on the stats, all up and down the stats, the Raiders dominated, and they also dominated in the turnover column, and that was the problem. A huge problem with throwing interceptions, whether it be from rookie Derek Carr, or from backup quarterback Matt Schaub. And, of course, there was a huge fumble that the Raider Nation is still trying to stomach, and this is going to be a long time with Darren McFadden, DMC, running off tackle and getting a substantial gain and then fumbling the ball, and that just seemed to take the wind out of the sails of the Raiders. And, of course, the Raider faithful, I am feeling for us all. And, because we're a very passionate group, an excited group, and, nobody can take that away from us. So the more people talk about it, the more we embrace it. But at the same time, it is enough is enough. I know Tony Sparano is doing a better job as far as rallying the team. But now we're in a point in time of the season where we have to have a victory. And so one of the things is, of course, up in your neck of the woods, Sean Wally, there's some things going on in the Pacific Northwest that are a little troubling, but at the same time, Seattle Seahawks have found a way to get a victory. And what I mean by that, beating the Carolina Panthers yesterday, 13-9.
Yeah, once again in Carolina, 3 years in a row, which is an anomaly in itself. Why are the Seattle Seahawks going to Carolina 3 straight years? They're not in the same division. That shouldn't be happening. If you want to play them home and home. Have one in Seattle 1 year, then go back to Carolina. But to have Seattle going 3 straight seasons down to play the Panthers is a bit strange. But, yeah, each time it's been a low-scoring defensive affair. And, once again, Russell Wilson, the final drive of the fourth quarter, 80 yards, he wills his team to a score.
Now, one of those wins, I believe, was a playoff victory last year, 12-7. I believe the Seattle Seahawks.
Week one in the season, oh,
week
not in
one,
the playoffs.
Week one, 12-7. And, of course, yeah, the Carolina Panthers definitely have the Seahawks number when it comes to keeping points off of the board. And so, of course, what we've been talking about over the past week and a half is, of course, Percy Harvin being sent to the New York Jets. And we can talk about that in just a minute as far as his debut as a New York Jet. But some of the goings on in the locker room with the Seattle Seahawks and trying to right the ship and get themselves back above 500, which they did yesterday. But are they out of the dark or are they in the clear just yet moving forward?
Well, there's definitely been more adversity here in 2014 compared to 2013, when it seemed they could do no wrong and everything was smelling like roses in Seattle on their way to raising the Lombardi Trophy. And with that comes more scrutiny. You're under the microscope, and people want to find a chink in that armor.
You know, and, you know, I can definitely see where you're talking about, you know, because when you are the champion, that puts you into the spotlight. That comes with the territory. And so, you know, Seattle fans should not look at that as a distraction or look at that as a problem. Look at that as a gesture of you finally arrived. And so when you have those types of problems, those are things that you should be excited about. Now, when you don't have those types of problems and people are talking about your team, then it becomes a huge issue. But right now, Seattle should be riding high. They are still the defending champions, Super Bowl champions. So if somebody's talking about your team, get over it. You are the world champions, and you will continue to be the world champions until beaten. But here is the thing. Like you're saying, week after week, teams will come after you. Don't be surprised if you're not pulling out these huge margin victories, because, again, that comes with the territory.
Now, Sean, the Oakland Raiders invade CenturyLink Field this coming Sunday. Is there any chance? It's a trap game for the Seahawks. There may or may not be some issues in the locker room. The players and coaches say they're not. They don't know where these stories have been made up and come from. And the Raiders, you figure they have to get a win at some point. They have to get the ball to bounce their way. Could this be it?
You know, the fan in me says yes. The fan in me says that this is an exciting time for the Raiders to actually head up and play against the defending Super Bowl champions and actually show what type of a team the Oakland Raiders actually are. And if you want to go back to the actual last victory, including preseason for the Oakland Raiders, it was against the Seattle Seahawks in preseason, of course, with the Raiders winning 41-31 in the confines of O.co. That was the debut of Derek Carr, 11 of 13 for 143 yards and three touchdowns. And, of course, that showed the wherewithal for Dennis Allen to say, hey, this is our starting quarterback moving forward. Now, with that being said, going into the hostile environment of CenturyLink Field is going to be a huge, huge task. And so, again, what we've been talking about with the issues in Seattle, I believe that home cooking is what can definitely fix some of the talks and murmurs that are going on. I expect the Seattle Seahawks to feed to CenturyLink Field in the 12th man, and it should be an interesting contest. I'm hoping that the Oakland Raiders will come out on top, but, you know, the actual prognostications don't bode well for them going into CenturyLink.
The odds makers are not favoring an Oakland upset. They're giving Seattle 15 points. I don't even know if I would take that 15 points and give it to the Raiders.
Well, you know, the last time the Seattle Seahawks had a huge spread, I believe it was an 8-point spread last time at home, and that was against the Dallas Cowboys, where, man, I don't even know what happened that contest, but Dallas took the spread and then some by beating the Seattle Seahawks. What I am looking forward to is seeing, you know, which team's fan base rallies the most. When this was the AFC West and when the Seattle Seahawks were in the AFC West, there was a strong contingency of Raider Nation fans that would always invade the Kingdome, whether it was the Kingdome, Husky Stadium, you name it. The Raider Nation definitely represents, especially up in the Pacific Northwest. And so I look forward to seeing that. I look forward to seeing a lot of silver and black in the stands. And, you know, if there's ever a time to try to take advantage of a team, when they're trying to get themselves back off the schneid, meaning the Seattle Seahawks, trying to get some momentum going. And hopefully the Raiders can go in there and take care of business.
Sean, and we may not have enough time for your answer as we await big time guest number one here tonight, and we can always continue this answer to my forthcoming question here later on in the show. But when a writer writes that an African American quarterback
in the NFL is perceived to not be black enough. Mm. What in the world does that mean?
Yeah, you know that you're right. I don't really have enough time to get into the logistics of that. But, you know, whenever you hear something like that, if that does come out of a locker room, that is nothing but the utmost disrespect, not just for a race, but, you know, for a team and for who you belong to. And there's just no place for it. I think Russell Wilson is an upstanding NFL player in the NFL that is doing everything that he can to lead his team. And so, you know, if there is that type of envy and jealousy, and to be honest with you, Sean, I know that it exists. But, you know, in this day and age, it's just sad to know that it can come from your camp, your family, from your locker room. And so if that is the case, I hope that these guys definitely right the ship.
Well, if you believe one Richard Sherman, he says that story was made up.
Well, you know, if you want to believe that, I have some magic beans that I'd like to sell you and a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you as well. Because, you know, I know that these types of things happen. I think that every time Seattle comes out and does damage control, it makes them look silly. I think that when Pete Carroll does that, it makes him look silly. I think the best thing that the Seattle Seahawks can do is to just go out and play Seattle Seahawks football and worry and let everybody else worry about those things and move on from there.
Well, let's go on out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in tonight's big-time guest number one. That is Sean Tomlinson, the lead NFC West writer for Bleacher Report. Sean, thanks for your time tonight.
It's quite the introduction, big time. I've got a lot to live up to now here. A lot of Sean here, too, I noticed.
Yeah, man, you know, didn't think about that until now, but yes, you are truly right, man.
I spelled it correct the way I believe. S-E-A-N, old school. That, Sean Connery, yeah, all the way, man.
Yeah, that's the only way. That's the way I spell it. I don't know what about Sean Wally. Maybe we can get him to change his name here in the coming weeks. So hey, Sean, you did an awesome article on Russell Wilson, how he salvaged the win against the Seattle Seahawks. And, you know, I mean, it's right there in our face, man. Tell me how you really feel. I mean, the way you wrote that article, I'm like, my goodness, what's really on your mind?
Yeah, I think, you know, this is sort of it's not a trick, for lack of a better word, but when you put a word in the headlines or a word up top, sometimes people latch on to it. The word, I believe, is undeserved, is the word that I used, that they didn't deserve that win. And by using that word, I'm saying that on that day, on that particular Sunday, for the majority of the game, they weren't the better team. But does that matter? I mean, there was a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes. There were the interception right in the end zone, fumble just shy of the red zone, a lot of missed opportunities, but in the end, that win, it gets, you know, Wilson comes in and does his wizard act in the final drive, grinds it out, and you get an ugly win. At the end of the day, obviously it's such a horrible cliche, but the only numbers that matter are on that scoreboard and the one that goes in the win column. But it does matter how you got there. And to consistently rely on Wilson doing that wizard act that I just mentioned is not a good recipe for success long term. But obviously you also have injuries right now. I mean, yeah, I know. Every team has injuries, but Bobby Wagner being out is not a pleasant situation. And I think it's going to be fun to see this team down the stretch. This division, it's just an absolute gauntlet going down the schedule. And it'll be interesting to watch.
Now, of course, the Seattle Seahawks and the Carolina Panthers, when they get together, it's always a close contest. And Sean Wally and myself talked about the 12-7 win that the Seattle Seahawks had in week one. It always seems like, you know, Carolina has their number. This should have been a game for the Seattle Seahawks to actually dominate. And what I mean by that is there were a string of injuries that the Carolina Panthers had, and so they were ripe for the taking. What would you say going forward here for the Seattle Seahawks should they look out for in the weeks to come?
Well, I mean, to talk with injuries, again, obviously Seattle has some of their own. Wagner getting back is massive, but I think the problems with the run defense do go beyond him. I mean, that is a significant decline we've seen over the past 2 weeks. It's still not. I'm not trying to make it out to be a gushing problem, but certainly, we're just a few weeks ago, they're only allowing 62.2 yards per game, I believe, and now that's gone up, and we've seen that is a bit of a point of weakness. And sure, in the secondary, we've seen some significant gains. I don't care who's out there, whether Richard Sherman or anybody. Sometimes you're just going to be on the wrong side of a matchup with, say, a Dez Bryant, for example. That's not an easy matchup for anybody. But I don't know. It just they've been so close every game. It's the games they lost. You know, obviously the St. Louis game that was. Some trickery there that was interesting, but you know, you come back every game. It's a team that's always right there, and they'll continue to be.
Sean Tomlinson joining us, the lead NFC West writer for BleacherReport.com. Sean, what are your thoughts on what is going on in the desert, the Valley of the Sun? The Arizona Cardinals just looked almost unstoppable, and they had a great game yesterday with the Eagles, back and forth, high scoring, high octane offense on both sides, and lo and behold, the Cardinals pull it out again.
They did. What's interesting to me is how Bruce Arians, the vertical offense mastermind he is, I suppose, is using Larry Fitzgerald. It's an old Larry Fitzgerald, but a new Larry Fitzgerald, if you will. So he's always been fast, of course, but now he's being asked to gain a lot of yards after the catch. That 80-yard catch, about 77 of those yards came after the catch. It just, and he's gone. And Arians, the management of that offense, of course, Carson Palmer misses time, misses three games. Drew Stanton comes in. You even had, for just over a quarter of one game, the third-string quarterback in, and yet they still only lost one game. It's you know, there are weaknesses, of course. You've seen that secondary take some hits and really take on a lot of yardage, but that's because it's hard to get a pass rush in there. You've lost John Abraham. Clayus Campbell is only coming back right now. Darnell Dockett's gone. So that to me, is the one area that I'm really interested to see if they can sustain themselves, especially going into this to week 9 when the Cowboys come into town. As we're watching as we speak, you need a great pass rush to disrupt Tony Romo. So, but no, it's been very impressive. And Andre Ellington, I mean, he's just such a versatile running back who can hurt you in so many ways and just make you miss in such a small space. He's a lot of fun to watch.
Now, this NFC West division, if everything stays about the same for the next few weeks, about week, as you're saying, week 9, week 10, we get into the end of November, into December, the Niners, Cardinals, Seahawks all start playing each other back to back to back, and that right there is going to determine whether or not the Cardinals stay on top.
They will. I'll be, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it's the Seahawks finish the year. Yeah, they, 5 of the last 6 games are divisional games, and of course that's throughout the division. That's just going to be an absolute dogfight going into the end of the year. And, you know, you even, I know we've, maybe right now they've fallen on some hard times, clearly, but even the Rams aren't an easy out, really. I mean, Austin Davis, that's been, he's been impressive for an undrafted quarterback, of course. That's not an easy game. They still have a solid pass rush, even though they maybe aren't getting there right now, putting up the numbers that we saw last year, but there are no easy games in this division, and it's really tough every week.
Sean Tomlinson with the BleacherReport.com joining us here on the double, and Sean, mentioning a little bit about San Francisco, the 49ers are coming off of a bye,
Yep.
And they have a few guys coming off of injury. And then there's talks of, you know, maybe one of their athletes and Smith coming off of an early suspension. I mean, do you expect the San Francisco 49ers to make a strong run at this NFC West and possibly surpass the Arizona Cardinals?
That's the key link right there to me, Alden Smith. They've done, considering all their injuries, Smith was an injury, but regardless, they've done very well to sustain that defense. They still have a great pass defense, of course. The Denver game was a step back, but that's the Broncos. That's a very difficult matchup. And we're talking about a pass rusher with Smith, who has 42 sacks in 43 career games, or it's something absurd. I don't have the number off the top of my head, but he turns that corner so fast. He's so strong, and that'll be a big boost for them. Now, Navarro Bowman, he'll be back at some point as well. Now, will we see the same Navarro Bowman? I doubt it, but even 75% of the Navarro Bowman from last year is better than most linebackers in the league. Of course, Patrick Willis will return as well. Now, on the offensive line, which at times is still solid, but shaky this year at times, Daniel Kilgore is out for the year. That's a significant injury. He was quite solid up front. Anthony Davis should be back. So it's a team that has really rarely been healthy all year. But again, I hate to keep going back to injuries, because you look at the top of this division, a team that's lost one game, and they're absolutely decimated too. But you fight and find a way through it, and the 49ers have done that so far, and I think they'll continue to do it. Of course, with the help of getting some bodies back too.
Now, Sean, shifting gears across the bay to the East Bay in Oakland, there are some troubling times in Raider Nation. Of course, what I mean by that, the 0-7 start by the Oakland Raiders. There are some bright glimmers in rookie quarterback Derek Carr, along with rookie linebacker Khalil Mack. What is going on, and how can the Raiders actually get out of this, or do you actually see them getting a victory this year?
It's so hard to bet on a winless season. I mean, did anybody do it with the Lions? It's not easy to winning any game in the NFL, but it's really difficult to lose 16 straight. But then again, if you go down their schedule, can you find a win? You're right.
Yeah.
Derek Carr has been, maybe using the word impressive has taken a touch too far, but he's been promising. He's been promising for a team that really hasn't put a lot of solid talent around him. I mean, when you look back at this past off season, it was head scratching. I mean, why are you letting Jared Belldeer go, for example? You draft a player and you develop him and you groom him and you can keep him. The Raiders essentially brought in a 2008 All-Star team. Yeah, it's between Justin Tuck, Lamar Woodley. It was a very confusing way to spend the absolute mountain of cap space they have. But then on the flip side, maybe they just players simply don't want to go there, because an NFL career is so short. You obviously want to experience success quickly and not waste your prime years. So it's a tough go for the Raiders. But yeah, Khalil Mack, there's speaking of hope. I mean, he could have easily been the first overall pick in a year that didn't have Jadeveon Clowney. He's really promising for the future.
Yeah, you're talking about the rest of the schedule, and it is a tough one. Of course, the Oakland Raiders start to play against, their non-league schedule will be against the NFC West. Of course, the Seattle Seahawks this weekend. Then they have Denver, San Diego, Kansas City, of course, all AFC West foes.
Yeah.
And then St. Louis and San Francisco. And Gosh,
again, can you pick a win there? I mean, of course, the Rams are struggling too. But as I just said, they're not a pushover team at all. Now they've lost Brian Quick and Jake Long, and things aren't getting any easier for them. But I don't know, it's really difficult to pick an easy game out there.
Well, let's hope the Raiders can find some type of momentum going here and at least get a few victories before the season ends.
Sure, but then you knock yourself out of that first pick again. But
yeah.
Sean Tomlinson, lead NFC West writer for Bleacher Report, thank you so much for your time tonight and staying up late, and thanks for getting on with us here short notice.
No problem.
Follow Sean on Twitter at Sean G. Tomlinson and read his stuff at bleacherreport.com.
Thanks again for being on, Sean.
Night.
There goes Sean Tomlinson of thebleacherreport.com. When we come back, we have guest number two, Steve Sandmeyer of 1090, The Fan, KFNQ. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on the double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd, and we've got a couple extra seconds here, so let's go right on out to the phone lines and welcome John from California. John, what's going on?
Not much, man. I just have you covered this already. What do you think about the coaching situation? Do you think Gruden coming back or somebody of that ilk would turn this thing around, or what are your thoughts on that?
Man, John, right now I don't think that if Gruden came back or if any top coach came back right now that they would be able to fix what's going on in Oakland. I think that it's more of a talent issue. I believe that the Raiders have some key pieces that they're putting together right now, as I had mentioned earlier, with Derek Carr along with Khalil Mack. You also have some younger players that are actually coming into their own and learning positions. But whenever the Oakland Raiders go and they play against an opponent, you know, of course, being a Raider fan, I feel like, you know, we should be able to take care of business. But, you know, when you match, you know, X's and O's, it just looks like you know, the coaching wise, there isn't a real fix for it right now. Now, do I love what's going on with Tony Sperano and the energy level that he's bringing to the Raider Nation? You bet. I think that we've needed that for quite some time. I believe that Dennis Allen wasn't able to give that to us the way that we wanted, but it sounds like the energy level has picked up in practices. It seems like the tempo has gotten a lot better. It's just a progression, and right now it sucks because we cannot get a win. And so, of course, we're looking this weekend, going up to CenturyLink and playing against a tough Seattle Seahawks team, the Super Bowl champions, by the way. And so, I think that we should do pretty well, though.
I think that I just think that Gruden has he's just forced magic with quarterbacks. And I don't know if you saw the Gruden special with him and Carr, and even with Menzel, Carr, Bortles. He seems to really like Carr, and I've heard him say that if he does come back, he'll come back to Oakland. And I just think that the way he rebuilt this team before, because it was because of him, we got back to where we were in 2001. And I just think that we need someone like that to come rebuild. Sperano is as much passion and as energy as him. I don't think he's a head coach. I just don't.
Well, I do. And thanks for giving us the call, John. And then I'll answer this call or answer your question here. I do believe that, if John Gruden were to come back to the Raider Nation, I think that it would be something that would definitely stir the fan base. I think that it would be something that would rally everybody all together. And at some point, we could get back to that, the great times of 99 to 2002. It's just right now, I just think that we need to build more on player personnel. And that is the biggest thing. We need a pass rush like nobody's business. We need to start to create and open more holes in the running game. And actually, to be honest with you, I believe that we need a running game. We need more running backs. And so, would I love to have Chucky back in the black hole and coaching for the Oakland Raiders? You bet. But I don't think that will be something that we're looking at anytime soon. But maybe in the off season, who knows? Mark Davis might bring that one up.
Let's count out the holy smoke nuts. .com phone lines and welcome in big time guest number two tonight, and go back to Seattle. Steve Sandmeyer is waiting, host of the Steve Sandmeyer Show on 1090 The Fan, CBS Sports Radio. Steve, thanks for your time.
I just want to know, my initials being double S, why did it take you so long to have me on the double S Express?
Oh, man. Well, man, we are shooting two for two today. Of course, Sean Tomlinson just on earlier. And, this whole S theme is a little eerie. But, what do you expect the week of Halloween?
I'm just making sure my kids at 6 and 4 years old don't blow out early of the sugar high. I got to pace them. It's going to be absolutely nuts. So I'm going to get my workout this week chasing those two around.
Yeah, you bet. I've got a 5-year-old and she is very, very excited about this weekend, no doubt. Well, Steve, a tough game, but a victory nonetheless for the Seattle Seahawks, winning against the Carolina Panthers 13-9. Of course, the talks around the 12th man and CenturyLink is, hey, we'll take this W, but things definitely have to get better.
Yeah, style points don't matter when you're struggling, and you guys know they were struggling in the home loss to Dallas and then the road loss to St. Louis, so it was definitely with an undermanned team. Go on the road, see if you can generate a pass rush and win a game. They accomplished those. You can worry about style points maybe over the next couple of weeks. It's difficult to swallow, as you understand, as a Raider fan. I'm absolutely stunned at how far things have fallen for them. But the Seahawks are a 15.5 point favorite coming up on Sunday. So if people want to talk about style points, that might be an option at home. The Hawks did a great job of putting the emphasis back on the pass rush, and they put a lot of new looks in there. I really liked looking at that side where Cliff Averill was on the edge and Michael Bennett moved in on the inside of Averill. That was a really athletic look on that side. They got a good pass rush. Cliff Averill, quite honestly, wasn't giving the Seahawks the same that he gave them last year, and it's not lack of effort. It's not by not trying. He just wasn't getting the results, and I thought he had a marvelous game yesterday. So it certainly wasn't pretty. There's a lot of things to fix. I mean, they shot themselves in the foot pretty much every other possession, and there's some things to clean up, but
in general, if you're a Seahawks fan, you have to be happy that they kind of got back to their roots, which is a really consistent pass rush, sound tackling, being in position to make plays. And they did that for the most part yesterday. Cam Newton was having a pretty good year and probably still will end up having a good year, even though he doesn't have a whole lot around him. Greg Olsen was an outstanding tight end until yesterday. He only had one catch, 15 yards. And Kelvin Benjamin's going to be a star in this league someday. But outside of that, there hasn't been a big running game to support Cam Newton, and he's still been able to move the ball up and down on opponents, but not yesterday. Seattle did a great job of containing him, and again, some different looks. I did some different stunts. I mentioned that side with Averill and Michael Bennett. Really like that look. Bennett on the interior. They can run a stunt, still get him out on the edge. And they shuttled in some new bodies, a few more blitzes, and they got home on a few of those blitzes. So I think it's encouraging because we didn't recognize this team here in Seattle a whole lot the first six games of the season, but we certainly recognized the one we saw yesterday. And to be able to generate that on the road is big. They can do it in front of the 12th man at Seattle on the silent snap count. When they have that extra second, they can look and see the ball snap and get a jump that way. But even during their incredible run last year defensively as that Super Bowl champion defense, they still sometimes disappeared on the road, and that was not the case yesterday. So I think on the defensive side of the football, you have to be really encouraged. But as you mentioned, on the offensive side, there's still a whole lot of things they got to work out.
Now, Steve, one of the things that they have to work out is this, you know, I don't know if it's more media talk or media jargon or if it's an actual reality, but you know, the lack of production from Marshawn Lynch, you know, is that something that he just needs to continue to fight through? Or does it look like he's actually, you know, showing give up in his game?
It's definitely not the latter. He is still hitting the hole just as hard, and he is still giving out max effort. I would like to see them get him involved more often. They seem to give him a token carry or two early to just show that look, and that's their identity, running the football. But I'm not asking for 30 carries a game, but more than 14. You know, let's get him between 20 and 25 and see what he can do. I think all that stuff with the Harvin thing and Marshawn Lynch's future being questioned, I think that's much ado about nothing because his future was in question even before any of that stuff arose this year. There was a good possibility that the Seahawks were going to go a different direction after this year. It's one of the reasons why Lynch held out in camp, because he had only a little bit of leverage, and it turned out not to be enough leverage. But if that was the time to make a holdout with 2 years left on a deal, you couldn't do it with 1 year left on a deal, or else they just cut ties. I think his future has always been in question, not just this week. And it's a business, and people can get their feathers ruffled if their buddy gets traded, but that happens. I have not seen a single let-up in Marshawn Lynch's game. The only thing I've seen is fewer runs to the guy, and I don't know whether it's a transition thing or not, but they need to get back to giving him the ball 20 to 25 times a game instead of 10 and 14 and things like that over the last 3 weeks. They've made a bigger commitment to the run because they're starting to run a little bit more on first and second down. I'd like to see them make even a greater commitment toward that, and they really haven't had a chance to do it while getting a lead. You know, they've been trailing in games. They've been struggling a little bit on the defensive side of the ball, so in certain cases they've had to abandon the pass. But I expect him a heavy dose next 2 weeks at home against the Raiders, of course, this weekend, and then the Giants the following weekend. I'd like to see him get 40 or more carries over those two games, and that'll go a long way into kind of reestablishing their ground game.
Now, Steve, adversity is on and off the field for the Seattle Seahawks. Isn't it almost better to have them now and get through them and fix them than in December or January?
No doubt, and it's kind of strange. Maybe it's not, but this team always seems to respond when something is in question, whether they're not getting enough love, they're not getting enough credit, you know, they're having some sort of something taken away from them, and I think a lot of people are trying to take the Hawks off the pedestal. That's how it works. I mean, this media and this sports world, and the Seahawks are no different than any other team. You get put up on a pedestal, and then once you're up there, they try and knock you off. And I think there is a little bit about this team, still as young as they are, that they'd rather be the hunter instead of the hunted, and they'd rather be that team that people write off and they want to prove wrong. They play with the chip on the shoulder. It's the most overused sports phrase, but that's what these guys do. So in a real sick, twisted way, I think this is the position they want to be in. Obviously, they don't want to have three losses on the schedule, but You know, it's difficult coming back and doing all the same things you did. And Earl Thomas even alluded to it before the game, guys. He was very contrite, very honest in his press conference. Said, hey, you know, we have not been a team together. We need to play on a string defensively. You need to be a leader. You've got to understand that with new people, you need to adapt. And he even acknowledged earlier this year that they've kind of lost that edge a little bit. They got a lot of it back, played a little bit, a lot of energy yesterday. But this thing is so long, guys. I mean, we'll be looking down the barrel in all likelihood of a 6-3 record here in a few weeks. Nothing is for granted. It's the NFL. You still got to go out there and take these next two home games against Oakland and the New York Giants. But a 6-3 record, I think the NFC is going to turn into a bit of an accordion and crunch inward. I think Arizona's going to have a loss or two. We'll see what happens with Dallas. And I just think this thing, after about week 11, week 12, you're going to have about 3-4 teams that are all within one game of one another atop the conference. You look at the other teams, the NFC South, my goodness, a 3-4-1 Carolina team still in first place. I think New Orleans kind of overtakes them. But in the grand scheme of things, for NFC supremacy, this thing is a long way from being written, and I am as impressed as anyone else is with Arizona's start. But we're only halfway through this thing. There's a lot of football to be played.
The Seahawks sent Percy Harvin to the Jets, which was a big shock, but they almost got two players for one in the rookies, Paul Richardson and Kevin Norwood. Do you think that Coach Carroll is going to let them play and give them a chance to show what they can do?
I think Richardson's going to have an opportunity with special teams. You saw that long kick return against Carolina, and he's going to be back there again this weekend. Personally, I'd like to see Paul Richardson return punts as well. Brian Walters being cleared from a concussion, so he'll probably resume those duties. Norwood has been steadily worked into the rotation. I don't see either one of those guys, Richardson or Norwood, having a major part in this passing game because you've got guys like Doug Baldwin and Jermaine Kearse already there. The Seahawks don't pass the ball a ton, relatively speaking, to begin with. However, they do spread it around. Russell Wilson completed passes to 9 different people in the win yesterday, and so they're going to get their opportunities. I like Norwood a lot. He's big, he has big hands, he's strong with the ball. I want to see what he can do. And Richardson, he is every bit as athletic and speedy as people kind of gave him that credit. The only reason why he slipped is because he's under 6 feet. He's a mighty mite, but he can really motor guys. And I'd like to see him do a little bit more on the punt return game. He will be back there returning kicks. So anytime you have a team like Seattle that values special teams and field position as much as they do, they're going to give an opportunity to a guy like Richardson. I don't expect a ton of it in the passing game, but heck, you make one or two key crucial catches during the course of a game, you can have an impact on it. So they'll have an impact. They just probably won't put up giant numbers.
Steve Sandmeyer of 1090, The Fan, KFNQ in Seattle. Steve, of course, there is a huge portion of the season left, as you had mentioned. Of course, with the Seahawks having, I believe, 2 games with the Cardinals left, 2 with the 49ers, and 1 with St. Louis. Looks like it's a 3-team race between the Cardinals, the Seahawks, and the 49ers. Who has enough gas from this point in the season moving forward to actually take the NFC West?
That's a really good question, because that's exactly what it is. Who's got something left in the tank, and really, you know, who can avoid injuries? And so far, every team, Niners, Seahawks, Cardinals, have had their injury issues, but the Cardinals have been able to man it better, and they've been able to focus and get it done better. Seahawks are really banged up. San Francisco 49ers are banged up. They're going to get Alden Smith back here shortly. That's going to help them. They're going to get a couple of other players returning, and the Seahawks will. Those 6 games to close out the season for the Seahawks are brutal, and they're all there. That swing during and after Thanksgiving week is going to be the season, really. You've got the Niners on Thanksgiving Day, if you're Seattle. Then you travel across the country on December 7th to play at Philadelphia. Then you return home and host the Niners on December 14th. I mean, that 3-week span alone right there might go a long way into determining, you know, who ends up winning this. I think Arizona certainly would have to be the favorite right now because they're playing with house money. A 2-game lead in a division that is a race between 3 teams is significant because you're going to see a lot of teams knocking the other off. I could see these teams, the fact that Seattle plays Arizona twice and San Francisco twice, where they split the series, winning on their home field, each team. And obviously when you've got a two-game lead right now, that's tough to overcome. And then you get into tiebreakers if you're fortunate enough. So Arizona certainly has the inside track. As far as who has more gas or who has enough gas to finish this thing, that's all going to be dependent upon injuries, guys. And I know the league is like that, and everyone has the same excuse. But, you know, I don't see a veteran team over another veteran team. Sure, the Seahawks won the Super Bowl last year, but, you know, the Niners were one tipped pass away from being that team in the NFC Championship game had they, you know, were able to overcome Seattle on that final drive. So there's plenty of experience there. And let's not forget the Niners and Colin Kaepernick and that crew got to the Super Bowl the year previously. So both the 49ers and the Seahawks are certainly a veteran team. And there's enough veterans on Arizona's team to understand the rigors of playing through a full season. They were outstanding at the end of last year, came up to Seattle, won that game at CenturyLink Field. So there's really no clear-cut advantage in terms of any veterans on one team where it's not on the other. I just think it's going to come down to which team is able to stay healthy. It's an obvious statement, but when you have these three teams that are handicapped so close together, that's normally what it comes down to. Which personnel can you have on the field in December?
Now, Steve, now bringing everything back to this weekend, of course, the next game for the Seattle Seahawks, the Oakland Raiders coming into to the clink. 15-point underdogs are the Oakland Raiders. What is your prognostication? I mean, I know that this is something that this should be – you know, pretty much a cakewalk for the Seattle Seahawks. But what would the Raiders have to do to actually come in and compete? Because, of course, any given Sunday, anything can happen. And what do the Seahawks have to do to actually make that statement that you were talking about earlier?
Well, first of all, I give Oakland just as good of a chance as anyone else. I was at the game last year when a winless Tampa team came to CenturyLink Field and went up 21-0 and had the ball. In the first half of that game, it was absolute stunned silence. The NFL, it's not nearly as big of a talent gap as a lot of people think. There is not a chance, at least right now, the way the Seahawks are playing. You know, they're only a half of a football team right now. They're struggling on offense. They're better defensively, but I'm not laying more than two touchdowns against anyone, even at home. So, obviously, the turnovers would be enormous, and if Oakland could take advantage of potentially some mistakes the Seahawks would make, that would help. I think in that situation, being such a big underdog, they'd have to somehow get a special teams touchdown, do something along the lines of generating points, because you know the story if you follow the Raiders. I think they're halfway decent defensively. They could probably use some help up front on the pass rush. Maybe not probably, strike that from the record. They could use some help up there. But, you know, they've stayed in game. They lose 16-9 at Foxborough against New England. They lose 31-28 to what I think is going to be another outstanding playoff team in San Diego. It's not like they're getting boat raced and blown out of every single game. Sure, they were flat yesterday in Cleveland, but you get down to that team in that environment, in that building, it's really tough to come back from. So if I'm taking the points as opposed to laying them, that's where I'm going to land on. Right now, Seattle still has a lot of things to fix. And I'm not going to lay more than two touchdowns on a spread against anyone. I don't care who it is. And I know it's been a long time since Oakland's won a game. What is it, 13 in a row? They're 0-7 now. They lost the last six games of the season last year. But, again, I watched Tampa come in winless, and they absolutely shoved Seattle up and down the field for a half of football before the Seahawks woke up. Nothing is guaranteed, at least not right now, for the Seahawks.
Steve, you've been in the Seattle sports radio scene for – getting closer to two decades. What have been some of your favorite moments and maybe some people you've been able to meet behind the scenes and have a chance to interview?
God, I'm getting old. Oh, my God. You just said that, and now it's hitting me. That's a tough question. Well, clearly, I mean, one of the best moments ever was when Keith Gilbertson made me coach. I don't know if you guys remember that. I was doing a Husky sideline reporting before Lee Edwards. Yeah, yeah. So that was clearly one of the highlights right there. No, I don't know. People that I meet, it's funny. I don't know about your guys' experience, because I know you guys have met people too, but the guys that have an image kind of outwardly that end up being totally different in person, some of the guys who were considered the biggest jerks of all time end up being the nicest people, like Paul O'Neill, okay? Always looks like he's pouting. Always looked like he's one of those guys. Couldn't stand him when he was with the Yankees, when the Mariners were good at the turn of the millennium and in the 2000 and 2001 years. And, you know, I just hated Paul O'Neill. I meet the guy. He's the nicest guy you're ever going to meet. And it's interesting. You get, and
you run across people that you have this image and you think they have this persona, but you meet them off the field and they're entirely different. Mike Holmgren's another one, great sense of humor, doesn't take himself too seriously. Clearly, all the guys over at the University of Washington, I just ran into Lorenzo Romar the other day. There's a guy who just does not remember a moment, or does not forget a moment, does not forget a name, does not forget a face, things like that. It's more of the people that you meet that you have kind of an idea of who they might be just based on, I don't know, articles online or seeing them on TV. You meet them in person, completely different people. So it's tough for me to narrow down just one. I just can't believe them. I'm totally rattled that you're right. It has been almost two decades, and I'm kind of wondering what the hell I've been doing the last 20 years.
Well, hey, Steve, we are definitely envious. We're trying to get down that same road, so hopefully we'll keep rocking. And thank you so much for your time and insight. And I work an occasional Seahawk game for the TV network, so hopefully I'll run into you in the press box and say hello.
Right on, Sean. Thanks for having me on, and keep it up, man. I've been checking out your podcast and keep bringing on these guests. And again, more guys with the initials double S, man. It's just a natural
fit. That's right.
Steve Sandmeyer, listen to him at 3 p.m. weekdays on 1090 The Fan in Seattle. Thanks for your time, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
You bet.
Hey, just to answer everybody's question on when the last time the Raiders won, man, then we're going all the way back to November 17th of last season at the Texans. The Raiders won 28-23. You know, a tough, hard-fought game. 28-23, November 17th. My goodness, that is going to be almost a full year coming up, Sean Wally.
Yeah, Sean, I was listening to Steve's show in Seattle this afternoon, and he had said that it's been 49 weeks, almost an entire calendar year, hard to fathom.
Oh, my goodness. Man, I know that your boys are the Super Bowl champions, but, man, would that be great tonic for the Raider Nation if they can get a victory against the Super Bowl champions up at the clink.
That would be your treat for Halloween, wouldn't it?
that would make my year. That would.
That cannot happen. I would never hear the end of it from you, from David Massey, from you name it, anybody in the Raider Nation. You know, you go 1-15, we repeat as a dynasty Super Bowl champs. Doesn't matter because we lost to the Raiders.
That's right. We've got our eye on a couple of games. It's that game this weekend and the San Francisco 49ers in December. And man, that would make our year, almost our decade, if we could actually get those two wins.
Well, as we discussed, it's going to be turnovers and, you know, special teams. If you look at what happened against Seattle, what the Rams did in St. Louis, they won that game on special teams. So maybe the Raiders can find some trickery in their bag of tricks for Halloween weekend, and who knows what could happen.
No doubt about it. Let's open up the phone lines for those who want to call in and talk to On the Double with the Double S Express. Talk to Sean Wally or Sean Boyd at 888-429-5471. Again, that is 888-429-5471. Sean Wally, we have a Monday night game going on right now. Man, those tough Dallas Cowboys are having a time at home. They're down to the Washington Redskins 17-10 early in the fourth.
And number nine, wearing the star on his helmet, was out of the game, at least for a while. Is Romo still out?
Yeah, he's still out. And, of course, the backup quarterback's coming. Actually, he's doing a pretty good job moving the team up the field. Murray has caught a pass for about 20-plus yards, and they're in scoring position. So the Dallas Cowboys are marching.
Now, Sean, as you know and we've talked about and many people probably saw, especially if they live in the Pacific Northwest, and it was also all over the national media on Friday, there was an unfortunate event at Marysville Pilchuck High School north of Seattle, a school shooting. And unfortunately, two female students have now lost their lives. One passed away on Sunday, unfortunately. And the Marysville Pilchuck football team was supposed to play Oak Harbor for first place in the division, the final game going into the playoffs. And the Oak Harbor football team did something so amazing. They voluntarily forfeit the game to give not only the victory to Marysville Pilchuck, but to give them the division crown. And even better than that, the entire football team got on a bus from Oak Harbor, Washington, which is on Whidbey Island, drove to Marysville Pilchuck and attended a candlelight vigil and showed their support for their fellow school that was going to be enemies on a football field that night.
Amazing. You know, it's amazing that, you know, in this day and age that, you know, the kids have to go through such tumultuous times, especially in getting an education. You know, these guys are there to go to school, to better themselves, to become, you know, positive pillars in society. And then, you know, these types of things happen, you know, as far as the school shooting is concerned up there in Marysville Pilchuck. And, you know, but there is that great feeling of, you know, that on what Oak Harbor has done as far as, you know, showing, you know, how they care, showing the humanistic side on that. You know, above all, it's more than a game. It's, you know, reaching out in a time of need. And, you know, that is just a great gesture, you know, by Oak Harbor doing that. And so, you know, it's tough. It's my heart's heavy because, you know, I have family and friends up there, and we both have family and friends up in that area. And so it is good to know that there are teams that actually show strong sportsmanship in making sure that, you know, even though there are a couple of people that lost their lives, a couple of students that lost their lives, you know, making sure that, you know, they rally strong and help develop a community and help it to become stronger.
And I have reached out to Oak Harbor High School, the athletic director, as well as head coach Turner of the football team, and would like to get one of them or both of them on the show. So hopefully we can do that in the near future. And one of the good things about Oak Harbor giving that victory in the record book to Marysville Pilchuck, both teams get to make the playoffs, and who knows, maybe they'll meet down the road.
Yeah, you know, and of course, you know, the WIAA is very strong and understanding, and I'm sure that they're going to find a way, you know, to help these teams, you know, get themselves back on track. And, you know, again, it's so hard. It's so hard to, you know, because I have a child in high school and, you know, and also a younger one in elementary school, and you just hope that when they go to school that things are safe. But, man, you know, it is. It's one of those tough things that we have to go through each and every day as a society. But, again, it's good to know that there are some great people out there that make things better.
Yeah, it helps to let people know that the world isn't always dark and dreary. And yes, there are problems. And yes, sometimes people do things they shouldn't. But at the end of the day, for most everybody, life goes on. And there are better people in this world than what sometimes the news and various media portray. You know, it's always the frauds, the murders, the embezzlements, what have you. And the world isn't all negative, and there are a lot of people doing really good things.
Yeah, and you know, and that's what we try to do on this show, of course, is make sure that we're bringing out that. But at the same time, we also have to recognize these types of situations. And so, you know, because that is a part of every day. Do want to send a heartfelt condolence out as well, Sean Wally, to the Raider Nation. We lost a good one, former Oakland Raiders lineman. Mo Collins died Sunday, age 38. And, man, it's amazing. You know, Mo Collins was a part of that great offensive line that the Oakland Raiders had, and you know, along with Mo Collins blocked for Rich Gannon, and you know, it was alongside Lincoln Kennedy, a University of Washington grad, and you know, just a heartfelt condolence out to the Raider Nation and Mo Collins and his family. gone at 30 years old, and man, definitely a deep loss in the Raider Nation.
Sean, any word on cause?
No word on cause just yet. I'm still looking into that, but yeah, there's some tough times. I'm sure I'll get a chance in the next week or so to talk with Lincoln Kennedy. We always chat a little bit, and so I'll get a chance to touch base with him and see what's going on there. But yeah, definitely a deep loss for the Oakland Raiders.
Well, Sean, this time next week, we will be dissecting a game between the Oakland Raiders and the Seattle Seahawks this coming Sunday, Halloween weekend. It'll be a treat for one team, a trick for the other.
Yes. And so, you know, hey, this is our playoff. So we're not playing for anything else right now. Each week is our playoff. And so I would love nothing more than the Raider Nation to represent. For those listening up in the Pacific Northwest, you know who you are, Raider Nation fans, and I definitely expect to see silver and black like back in the day, filling those stands and repping. And so, Sean, you'll have a chance to be there at the game, I understand.
Negative. You know where I'll be.
Ah.
I will be in Pullman this weekend.
I was so hoping that you would get a chance to get there, and you know, I wanted to get some of the play-by-play, the rundown. But, hey, we'll get a chance to see, you know, what's going on Sunday. And I'm sure you'll be texting me, and I'll be texting you back and forth. And it should be a great, great contest.
Well, we do have good buddy and fellow television freelancer Chad Kramer working the game for CBS. So maybe he can give us a call next Monday and let us know what it felt like being at CenturyLink for the big Halloween weekend game.
No doubt. Definitely have Chad call in and give us a report. You know, I'm expecting that it's going to be in the favor of the silver and black.
Now, hey, Halloween's not till Friday, so take your mask off, Sean. Not time to be wearing no get-up yet.
Hey, you know adults. Adults can run the party all through the weekend. So this can spill all the way into Monday morning. And so, you know, if we can get this W, that would be an awesome, awesome accomplishment.
Sean is drinking the Kool-Aid and he is high on life. That is for sure. And that is Sean Boyd. Let me preface that.
Yes. And so, you know, I'm expecting this victory. I'm going to relish this. You know, there hasn't been much to look forward to. So this weekend is something important. Very important. You know, there's the Raiders Seahawks ties that a lot of people really don't know. Of course, with your president, the president of the Seahawks, and of course, the general manager for the Raiders. And, you know, there have been some exchanges that have gone back and forth between the two that have come in the negative column for the Oakland Raiders. And so I can thank the Seattle Seahawks for giving us Trash and Matt Flynn. And we sent some back in return, and Terrell Pryor. And so, you know, both of these guys have Green Bay Packer ties. And so, of course, Seattle has figured it out as far as to, you know, getting themselves on the winning tradition and consistency like Green Bay. And hopefully Oakland can get that here soon. So, you know, there's a strong tie between the two organizations. And, you know, I think we owe Seattle this favor for giving us that.
You know, I want to find for you, and I think maybe you should give a little speech that goes something like, to be the best, you've got to beat the best. So your Raiders kind of have an idea of how they can get this done on Sunday in Seattle.
Yeah, nothing like a little Ric Flair before the game. I might have to pull him up and listen to get me amped up.
Well, we've got one more listener out there wanting to talk a little sports. Let's go out to Lakewood, Washington. Gil, how are you?
Hey, good evening, Sean. Hi, good to hear the voice again. I'm a long-lost listener there and thought I'd come back and let you all hear from me. I hear my son there on the other end talking there, but I just wanted you all to give you a shout-out. Doing a good job as you've always do.
Well, hey, Dad, thanks for calling in on the show.
Yeah, hey, great compassion, man. You talked about the former Raider. I think that was Mo Collins who passed recently. And
yes.
Of course, he was 38 years old, and it was just sad to hear that. But anyway, you were wondering, I think Sean Wally asked, what was the reason or the cause for his passing. And it was kidney failure. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course, he'd been having dialysis treatment over the past few years, and Mo Collins passed recently due to kidney failure.
Well, that's
sad. A young man, 38 years old, and, well, had to go through dialysis and didn't make it. But anyway, hey, listening to your show, you all doing a fantastic job as usual. And Sean Wally, good to hear your voice as well.
Well, Mr. Boyd, thank you so much for calling in and listening as you do every week. And hey, you brought great knowledge to the show because you gave us some information we didn't have on how Collins passed, unfortunately, but thank you for that.
Yes. That's right. Right. I just wanted to come up with those facts and everything. But anyway, so, I heard something about my Seattle Seahawks there. You all, I don't know how long I have, how much time I have, but anyway, I'll be brief.
You've got all night, sir, all night. As long as you want to, you know, talk a little Seahawk Raider action, go for it.
My goodness. Of course.
Yes, of course, my brother-in-law played for the Oakland Raiders back there in the 60s. There, you guys weren't born or anything, but I did. But Nehemiah Wilson with Jack Tatum and that group back there back in the 60s, the late 60s there it is. But I was a Raider fan, a diehard Raider. I missed church to watch the Raiders play back during that time. But anyway, the Seattle Seahawks were born in 76, and I became a Seattle Seahawk fan, and I've been with them ever since.
Now, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Hold on just a second.
Oh, this is my favorite show.
Yes. So, because there are a lot of Raider Nation faithful that are listening, and
I can imagine.
Now, are you sure that you became a fan in 76? Are you sure that you became a Seahawks fan in 76?
You got me there.
I do recall a father figure that was there rooting with me as the Raiders won the Super Bowl in 80 and 83. So I'm
because
not sure.
AFC West.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, I slowly modulated there, sort of like modulated to being a Seattle Seahawks fan there later on. But
yeah,
anyway,
like 2000.
They are all right. They're fantastic. You know, they played the Carolina Panthers recently, and they came up with a low or odd figure as a score. That was last year, and deja vu. Here, they came up with another low score of 12-9. So I think they know one another. So, but anyway, they won, and they're getting back on track. The Seahawks, yeah. They're getting back on track, and they'll be back there. They'll be back for the Super Bowl. So just hanging there. Hang in there, Seahawks fans. Hang in there, 12th man. We'll be there.
Well, there you have it. Dad's getting on. Hey, Dad, thanks for coming on and bestowing your wisdom. And so, good luck to your team this weekend. But I do see a victory for the silver and black. And here, and Dad, don't call me after the win, after the Oakland Raiders win, saying that you have always rooted for. As a matter of fact, the Raider Nation. I'm getting texts right now, and it's amazing that I'm in trouble. Yeah. I'm in trouble right now because there's a strong lineage of Raider fans in our family, and of course there's one or two that defect and do some weird things, and right now you're falling into that category. But you can enjoy this Super Bowl year, and yes. we'll talk after this weekend to see how things go.
Well, hey, I have my ears open and listening, but hey, next week with the Raiders there, especially up here, facing the Raiders facing the 12th man, and all that volume and noise and everything. Hey, it's going to be great for the Seahawks. It'll be just another stepping stone moving on up the ladder there towards that Super Bowl. Hey, you all are fantastic and everything. Appreciate you, and keep up the good work, and I'll listen out for you later.
Thank you.
Mr. Boyd, thank you so much for calling in tonight, and thank you for seeing the light and coming over to the good side.
There you go. Thank you, Sean. You all have a great show there, and hear from you later.
All right.
There goes Gil out of Lakewood, Washington.
Oh, my goodness.
Moxie for the blue and green.
Yeah, you know, he showed a lot of guts, definitely coming out and confessing the blue and the green there. But, you know, it is what it is. I can tell you this, Sean.
We don't hide behind curtains or doors or...
I can tell you this. Last year, Seattle did an excellent job in their ownership in making sure that a certain amount of San Francisco 49er fans didn't get tickets to the NFC West or the NFC Championship. I would love to see them try to do that against the Raider Nation this Sunday. They will be in full force at the Clink, and there will be some bitter fans on Facebook, sad and upset, because there's an invasion of the Raider Nation. I guarantee that. I put money on that because that's how strong the Raider Nation is. Win, lose, or tie, Raider Nation till I die. Show number 77 in the books. 76 in the books.
Yeah,
it's been a great show.
You're a week ahead if you're going to 77.
76 in the books. Of course, we had two great guests on. We had Sean Tomlinson from the BleacherReport.com. With a little bit of an accent across the border there in Canada. And our second guest, the awesome Steve Sandmeyer of 1090 The Fan, KFNQ. You can catch his show online from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Fridays. Two great guests. Of course, we had some awesome callers calling in. Show number 76 in the book, Sean Wally.
It's been a good one. And come on back next Monday. We'll see who is victorious between the Raiders, the Seahawks, rehashing the old AFC West rivalry days, the Seahawk fans in their Raider hater shirts. We'll see if there might be one or two of them at the Clink dusting off from the 1980s. Be sure to check out our shows on demand if you miss one or want to hear it again. Over 76 shows once this one's up sometime tomorrow. You got iTunes, you got Stitcher Radio, bbsradio.com, or double-s-express.com. So many ways to check us out. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at @SSExpress. For Sean Boyd, I'm Sean Wally. Have a safe, happy Halloween.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.